Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, my name is Dennis Boog-Heiberger. I'm a state representative from the 46th District in Lawrence, Kansas.
Thanks for being here. Roll the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka, the issues, and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. Joining Boog and myself in the KCUR production studio is John Butcher from Mission Kansas and my KCUR colleague Laura Spencer, who keeps an eye on the arts world for us and is my office mate, I don't know, maybe 200 feet away from here. Boog, I want to start. There's a couple things we're gonna get to. I want to get to the budget. I want to get to education. I want to get to what's going to happen here in the next week or so when everything moves to the floor action. But I want to chat with you real quick. You've been in a politics a long time. You were in the Lawrence City Commission. You were mayor for a term.
So somebody had to do it.
Well, is that the reason you went to the State House? Because that just seems like you just walked into a political headlock over there.
No, it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time, and our seat came open, and I really was hoping I could make a little bit of a difference to help, basically help control some of the damage that I expected to happen.
Yeah, and how is it, you're in your freshman year, so what is it that you expected, and what is it that that you found out that is unexpected?
Well, I'll step back just a little bit. I mean, people ask me a lot what the first session's like, and I told them it's kind of like watching a train wreck. And I think the wreck really started to happen last week. But I guess in one way, I was pleased to see so many good, fair-minded, moderate Republicans in the House. I mean, there aren't enough to do the things I want to do, but that was a pleasant surprise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, a lot of things to get to, but first I want to go around the table and hear what's on everybody's mind. John, what's on your mind this legislative session that Boog needs to know about?
Well, I have some questions about the laws regarding concealed carry licenses in the state of Kansas. I have seen that. I have concerns about it. Over my lifetime, I started out even as a youngster watching Gunsmoke. I'm hoping that that's not where we're headed back to. But I have a concern about that. I have young children. I guess my children are in their 30s, but that's young to me now. And I can't say that I feel comfortable being in an environment where I know that's quite likely the person sitting next to me or someone that I'm encountering may have a weapon that could do the kind of damage that these weapons can do, and that's somewhat concerning to me.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about that on this podcast before, so I think maybe I need to know, why do you think, Boog, that it moved so swiftly through the legislature this year, this law to allow people to carry a concealed weapon without a permit?
I don't know. I do know that it had 26 sponsors in the Senate when it only needed 20 votes to pass. Now I wouldn't respond to something John said. I mean, I've accused this legislature of marching backwards toward the 19th century on any number of occasions, but I think this is one instance where that's not true. I mean, the Wild Wild West wasn't like this. From what I've read, for everything I've read, if you were in one of the frontier towns in the 80s, if you rode into town, you had to leave your guns for the sheriff. You know, so I mean, if there were Second Amendment concerns there, they weren't expressed then. You know, I don't believe for a second that the founding fathers, who were invoked over there quite a bit, really imagined a time when you could conceal a deadly weapon on your person and carry it in public places. I don't think they had weapons like that at the time. Mm-hmm. So I think the intent of the Founding Fathers' argument is not persuasive in this case.
Yeah, I'm going to move on just a second. But, John, I want to ask you, is your fear that you're going to walk into the Price Chopper and there's going to be a shootout? What's the fear?
I don't think so much that I'm going to walk into a Price Chopper or some public place and have a shootout. It's just the thought of knowing that someone who maybe not necessarily be as physically large as I am, or regardless of anything like that, any individual, even someone lower side, can take you out of here if they choose to. You know, maybe you've done something to someone and you don't even know. Or maybe it wasn't even you. Maybe they think it was you and you, they got you. I had a guy that I went to school with at KU who was shot in the back and killed, though a mistaken identity. And doesn't make any difference. He's just as gone as he would have been for any other reason. And so thinking about somebody making a mistake like that, or for whatever reason, there's no coming back if they make if someone uses one of these weapons against you.
All right, I want to get to school funding in just a second, but let's keep going around the table. Laura, what's on your mind?
Well,
by the way, I think you're the perfect size.
I should say I'm 5'2". I know it's short, but...
But if you're packing, I want to be able to see it.
Okay, well, I'll try to remember that. Well, Boog, you mentioned that you wanted to make a little bit of difference. Mm-hmm. And when I told a friend that I was going to be part of this discussion today, he said if he had a question to ask you, he would ask you, how can you stand to go to work every day? I mean, how can you stand it?
Well, I'm a very patient person. And I'm used to being in a minority. My second term on the city commission, there was it's basically a 4-1 commission. I was the one a lot of the time. So I've had some experience with it. But I still think that if you come in, or if you're patient, if you meet people face to face and discuss things with them, you can help make a difference. I mean, I'm not sure it's changed anybody's vote yet, but I still want to be there to see what's going on and to let people know what's going on. I think a lot of my constituents really appreciate hearing some of the things that go on behind the scenes there, which I find really pretty appalling. I mean, I come from city government, and if city government behaved the way the state legislature does, we'd all be thrown out. People wouldn't stand for it. The process is much less transparent and much less designed for rational decision making.
Yeah. Where have you been able to meet your colleagues in the short time that you've been in the legislature in compromise? Where have you had a compromising experience? I mean that in a good way.
The whole
of
thing's
course.
A compromising experience, Sam. You know, I can't think of a good example. I mean, I've had discussions, but like I said, I'm not sure I've swayed any votes.
What the so the concern here is that the question is sort of based on we're not seeing what I think we traditionally want out of a legislative body, and that is different ideas being thrown together,
sure,
and then a compromise, maybe even something better than the sum of its parts coming out.
Well, the problem in the Kansas legislature right now is just it's so imbalanced. I mean, there are 28 Democrats out of 125 in the House, 8 Democrats out of 40 in the Senate. So they really don't have to talk to us. In the past, there were enough moderate Republicans that they couldn't count on to do. The far right didn't have all the votes it needed to do everything. That's not the case anymore for most issues.
Mm-hmm. So, as we sit here on Saturday, there was a march from different Johnson County towns to Topeka, a protest of the way that we've changed school funding.
And I just came from that march because they stopped in Lawrence.
They stopped in Lawrence. Right. That's right. They stopped in Lawrence. And I want to go around the table and get some thoughts about school funding. You know, if you believe the Republicans, block grants are the way that we should go, that it gives a lot of flexibility to local districts. Educators would argue that this freezes, for 2 years. It doesn't take into consideration anything, including inflation. So where are we on school funding? John, I want to your kids came up in Johnson County schools to some degree.
Well, my son went to a school in the Olathe School District. I have two daughters, and they're all 1 year apart. They started out in public school in Olathe, but when they went into the secondary level, they wound up going to private school here in Kansas City, and that was primarily, with us being African American, that was for diversity reasons that they did that. I think that the quality, the caliber of education that they would have gotten if they had gone to the public schools where we lived would have been very adequate. And so I didn't have a problem with that. It was just more an issue of them having more diversity, which was a better environment for them from that standpoint.
Yeah, have you been following this school funding kerfluffle in Kansas?
Not as close as I probably should have, but somewhat, yes. And I that was one of the issues that I thought I'd talk about today. So I called myself boning up on it somewhat. And the block grant situation, I don't know what to anticipate from that. It's something that it baffles me, how we can expect that to be a viable answer for, you know, funding issues that we may have in front of us right now. But, you know, it's certainly interesting, and I'm going to hone in on it and follow it a lot more closely from here on.
All right. Boog, what's your thoughts here on block grants? And I want to talk a little bit about the Abrams proposal for funding going forward in the Senate. While you're doing that, hey, John, would you pour me another half a cup of coffee? It's right, this cup right there.
Right.
You just
right.
do that. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Boog.
That's fine. Well, I mean, the governor's administration indicated that the problem we had was with our school financing formula. It was too complicated and wasn't fair. You know, I think that's incorrect. I mean, this.
If you want more, I'll hit you again.
I'm sorry. If that's all right, the financing formula has been through two court decisions, and the courts found no problem at all with it. They found that we were not adequately funding the formula. And I think that the block grant proposal is merely an effort to evade the court order to adequately fund education. I talked to one of my school board members this morning. She estimated that our district will lose $1.6 million in the current year from the change, and $2.2 million each year for the 2 years after that. And that is assuming that we fund everything that we say we're going to, which, given the revenue situation, seems pretty unlikely at this point. So I really do believe it was an effort to circumvent the court decision, and I don't think it's going to work ultimately. Yeah.
The chairman of the Senate Education Committee, Steve Abrams from mm-hmm. Ark City, had a proposal out that would be rolled out to the six innovative school districts in Kansas. That includes Blue Valley and Kansas City, Kansas here in the metro. That appears at least to have a little bit of. It certainly had a lot of input from the innovative school districts, and it takes into consideration both population, poverty, but also gives bonuses, if you will, on the other side for achievement, which may be a little bit difficult to show. So it's only gotten one hearing so far, but I'm interested to hear what you may think about that.
You know, I haven't studied the proposal in detail, so I can't comment authoritatively on it. But, I mean, again, it's getting back toward it has a lot of elements of the formula that we just threw out because it was too complicated. Right. You know, anything that, as long as the formula adequately takes into consideration the different needs of different districts and it's adequately funded, I'm certainly willing to consider it.
Yeah. Laura? Yeah. Well, I saw you lean forward. It looks like you have something to say.
It just makes you wonder with funding cuts, you know, where those funds cuts are going to come from for the districts. I mean, teachers for a long time have complained about classroom size and, you know, one that's kind of an easy cut is cutting salaries for teachers. And so it just does make you wonder with how districts are going to manage potential cuts.
I think for a lot of districts, it may come out of capital outlay. I think there's an ability to move those funds around now, which is why you'll see some school districts being able to build new buildings when they're not able to, you know, have enough supplies in their classrooms. So for the short run, that might help. But in the long run, it's not a solution either.
Yeah. John?
Do you think that over time, and let's say 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, that may be a hindrance in terms of being able to attract good teachers?
Oh, I think it's already an issue. And I think it's already becoming an issue with employment, too. And as Representative Tom Sloan said at the rally this morning, no employer wants stupid employees. You know, I mean, if we're going to build our economy for the 21st century, we need a strong educational system, and we're not making the investments we need to make sure that happens.
Well, I mean, isn't that that's the hallmark of Kansas education going back 100 right. years, is that when you came to Kansas, you had an educated workforce and you had damn good roads, and that's the reason to move here, because we don't have mountains or a beach.
Right. Well, and you I may sort of launch into a campaign speech, but I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean,
I'll stop you when I need okay. to, but go ahead.
Well, as I told people when I was campaigning, I'm not going to promise not to raise your taxes. The reason is that low tax rates have no causal relationship whatsoever with prosperity. If that were the case, places like Mississippi and Afghanistan would be economic powerhouses, and places like Sweden and Massachusetts would be impoverished, but they're not. Because what's really necessary for prosperity is a good education system, good infrastructure, and a good social safety net. And if you don't have those things, you will not be prosperous no matter how low your tax rates are. And in Kansas, we have not been raising the revenue we need to make the investments that we need to make to ensure that our children have a prosperous future.
Yeah, although we just got a pretty good jobs report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, so there, you know, you're going to hear the argument,
sure.
And there could certainly be some validity behind it that, well, you know, the economy is certainly not tanking, and we're creating jobs.
Yeah, I think we're lagging behind our surrounding states, too. I mean, I think, you know, President Obama got a lot of blame for things during the election. I don't see anybody blaming him for the lowering unemployment rates or the increasing economy. I think to some extent, Kansas is being drug along by the increasing wave of good economic news across the country. We'll see. I'm really anxiously awaiting the next revenue reports.
Right. That comes at the end of April, correct?
I believe so, yes.
And that moves us into the budget discussion that I want to have, mm-hmm. and that is that you're still, the legislature's still looking at $200 and some million, $260 million maybe to fund in this fiscal year, $600 million in the next fiscal year shortfall. And I think we're now waiting for the consensus revenue estimate that comes in April before some real decisions made. Is that sort of the track you see that we're on, Boog?
Yes, that's my understanding, yes.
Yeah. So first of all, let me ask you, how do you see closing the budget gap in this fiscal year? It ends on June 30th. You know, the governor's proposed sin taxes, that seems to not be getting a lot of traction in the legislature. So do you see a tax increase, or are we going to look at more, are we going to have to look at more cuts to balance the budget?
Well, I don't see any way out of this without a revenue increase. And we'll go back to the sin taxes in a minute, maybe. But you know, as Representative Heineman from Dighton pointed out earlier this year, we need to close the projected gap in next year's budget. We would have to completely cut every cabinet agency, all the Highway Patrol, corrections, just everything. I mean, the money just isn't there to cut. I mean, you know, and we've already tapped out the Bank of KDOT. I don't think there's any more money to steal there. So I think there's really no answer without a revenue increase of some sort. The governor has proposed, as you said, sin taxes, increase on the liquor tax and the cigarette tax. You know, in a normal year, I would be certainly willing to consider an increase in the cigarette tax. I mean, I think there is evidence showing that it cuts down consumption and, you know, keeps people from dying of lung cancer. But I think here is just another attempt to balance the budget on the backs of poor people and working class people. And this year, I can't support it.
Yeah. Two things, John. As I recall you telling me, you were a state employee for a long time.
Yeah.
So what is it like to look at a place where you work for a long time? I guess what I'm asking is, how do you think government has changed from your time as a state employee to now looking at it from the outside? And then I want to ask you about taxes real quick. But first, how do you think government the operation of it has changed since you've been there and left?
Well, I don't know that I'm the best person to speak on that. At the time when I was a state employee, I worked with job development employment programs to help people obtain employable skills and be taxpaying citizens and be able to contribute. And I can remember so vividly how frustrating it was at that time not really having what I felt was enough to be able to offer to people what they needed in order to mm-hmm. succeed. And I felt that there were too many times that there was someone sitting across the table from me that needed help. And I'm trying to make them feel better all while knowing that I can't really help. Mm. If that makes sense. I, I, didn't feel that we had adequate funding then to be able to do what we needed, at least to the level that was necessary to be what I considered viable.
Yeah, and Boog, I think, and even now, you know, we've had cuts in food stamps, cuts in general aid. We did get some good news about a grant for some job training for people who are on. SNAP or food stamps, but what about that? I mean, it seems like we have even less to offer those who perhaps need it.
That's certainly the case, and there's definitely an antagonism toward government in the people who compromise the government these days. I think there's not an acknowledgement that people like John are doing good work that are helping individuals and helping society at the same time. I really, really don't understand the antagonism toward working people, and especially teachers and public employees that I see in the State House now. It just boggles my mind. It's something that I think has to change. I think 50 years ago, even 100 years ago, we understood that the best way to have a prosperous economy is to make sure that working people are paid well and treated with dignity and respect. There's been an absolute disrespect toward teachers and public employees shown that I've seen during this time in the session, and it really disheartens me.
Yeah. John, you'd pay a little bit more taxes. Where are you on this? You'd pay, what do you think about if Boog came to you and said, yeah, I'm going to raise your taxes a little bit?
You know, as long as I feel that we see the benefit from it, and because we all have to carry a portion of the load, if I see it and it seems like something that makes sense, and you can see the benefits, I may not feel great about it, but I can certainly be accepting and understand that it's worthwhile, something to do.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, John, but we would not have to raise your taxes in order to make our state government work again. I mean, the existing administration has totally exempted from taxes something in the order of 300,000 companies just because they are organized as LLCs or S corporations, pass-through entities.
Yep.
And it was sold as a way to support small business, but there wasn't much acknowledgement given to the fact that the people who own the second largest privately held company in America live in Wichita, and are, you know, the amount of money that they're saving from this is probably in the tens of millions. You know, the current administration raised taxes on people in the bottom 20% of the income brackets here. So if we could just go back to making our tax system fair again, we could get the money we need without having to raise John's taxes.
Coming to the end here, but I want to go around the horn one more time with thoughts or questions. Laura, what do you got?
Governor Brownback was booed the other night during the Wichita State KU game, and I thought it's sort of an interesting phenomenon that, you know, happened in bars and homes, and I'm just wondering, you know, what your thoughts are about respect or disrespect towards Brownback, and if that's, I mean, just any thoughts you might have.
I try to be respectful, and I think at the State House we are all mutually respectful, and I really do appreciate that about my colleagues.
Mm. John, one final thought or question: what does Boog need to know when he goes back to work here? What can he do to make your life better?
I'm taking notes, John.
How much time do you say we have? You know, I think that the way things are right now for me, I am approaching, you know, retirement age. I'm saying approaching retirement age. I'm there. And I'm concerned about taxes, as each and every one of us is. And I'm at a point where very shortly from now, I will start to reap back some of the benefits that I've paid into for my entire working career. And I want to maximize that as best I possibly can. I would be doing it right now if I were about 9 months older. And I know that I don't have limits on how much I can receive before how much I can earn outside in terms of my work, because I'm still working. If I earn over a certain set amount, then I jeopardize, you know, my Social Security. So I don't take it until I get to the point where I'm at an age where my earnings aren't going to cause any problem with my reaping back the benefits that I've paid into for all these years. So I don't know what can be done about that. I think that is the way it is, and it's the way the system is, and I've been accepting of it, and I guess I don't know any better.
Mm. And you're are you part of CAPERS? Were you in government?
I was when I worked for the state.
So you've got some money in CAPERS, right?
I had some money in CAPERS right. When I got out of there.
I see.
I didn't make a real wise move in terms of what I needed, and I needed to spend it, and I did.
Yeah.
And you know what the problems are when you spend? That's what we call qualified money. That money is not really meant for you to spend it before you're age 59 and a half, and I wasn't anywhere close to that.
Yeah. Just a quick comment from you on CAPERS. Going to float some bonds. $1.5 billion, I think. Is that correct, Boog?
That's my understanding.
And then to try to prop up CAPERS, where are you on that?
Well, it might work. I think it's...
And just real quick, CAPERS is the retirement system for state employees in Kansas, teachers, pretty much everybody.
Right. And so just for a little background, we've passed a bill that would allow us to borrow $1.5 billion to put payments into CAPERS so that the state can lower its contribution rate. And the idea of the money... The return that CAPERS would get on this money would be better than the amount of interest we're paying. You know, if the stock market stays fine, it might work. If we actually make the payments that we're supposed to make to CAPERS, it might work. I think it's a bad idea, and I think it's gambling with the Kansas taxpayers' hard-earned money.
Outstanding. Once again, I'm leaving this podcast smarter than when I came in. John Butcher from Mission, thank you. My colleague Laura Spencer from just down the hall and just down the street, actually. Thank you for being here. Program is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can find us on Tuesdays on Up to Date with my buddy Steve Kraske. They make a little room for us at 11 o'clock. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or you can find us on KCUR.org. Have you been to KCUR.org lately? It's looking pretty good. We've spiffed that up for you, so I hope you're enjoying it. We're to get to know Boog just a little bit better. We end the program with your favorite song. What is it?
My favorite song. I'm not sure I have a favorite song. The one that's been in my head the last few days is something I heard on KCUR. It's Never Leave Harlan Alive.
I like it. That's State House Blend for this week. I'm Sam Zeff. We'll see you next time.